From KBIA News in Columbia, this is Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari. Today on Intersection, we're talking about diversity and inclusivity at the University of Missouri with UM System Interim President Mike Middleton. We're also talking with Angela Speck, Professor of Physics and Astronomy, Director of the Astronomy Program, and Chair of the Faculty Council Diversity Enhancement Committee at MU. This is a special two-part show, and next week we'll continue the conversation on diversity and inclusivity with students. Over the past few months, race and racism have been at the center of conversations about this school. Protests that included demands for direct address of racism on campus, increased hiring of faculty of color, and removal of MU System President Tim Wolf led to Wolf's resignation. Now the university is looking for a way forward. In conversations about that way forward, you often hear several words used, including the words diversity and inclusivity. But those words can mean different things to different people. So today, and in our show next week here on Intersection, we're talking with several leaders at MU about what those words mean to them. We're also talking about how these leaders envision those concepts developing within the university going forward, what's already happening, and challenges those developments face. Mike Middleton was named MU System Interim President in November. He was the third African American to graduate from MU Law and went on to a career in civil rights with the federal government. He returned to Mizzou as a law professor and later served as deputy chancellor.
We've been talking a lot as we think about reporting on these projects about the words that we use a lot, like diversity and inclusivity. Mm-hmm. So my first question for you is, what do those words mean to you in terms of this school and this campus?
It's a good question. Diversity, I think, has historically been associated with the numbers, increasing the numbers of students, faculty from a variety of marginalized groups, and it was almost an outgrowth or a rebranding of affirmative action, diversity. At least that's the way it's been thought of in the minds of lots of people. Though I think when we initially started using diversity, we meant it in a much broader sense. And part of the breadth of that sense was this concept of inclusion. And I put it on a continuum. We've done a pretty good job over the years of numerically diversifying our campus. We haven't done a lot in terms of including students from these diverse backgrounds in the mainstream of campus activity. So that's what I think of as inclusion. That's why I think it's such a good idea to include that word in the dialogue, because it brings in the concept that you've got to do more than simply get some numbers and tolerate their existence. We want to include them in what we do and make sure they feel as if they are included.
Some of what we've heard in recent months is that people don't feel included in many ways. Mm-hmm. What concrete steps can be taken to change the culture of campus so that people do feel included?
I think that has a lot to do with education and conversation. I'm a part of this race relations committee on the Columbia campus. I was appointed to that group before I left the campus, and I'm still on it, so I'm kind of happy with that. But it was a very diverse group of faculty, students, and staff, men, women, black, white, and Hispanic, and I think it's a Puerto Rican woman on it. But we have been talking about these issues around a table like this all summer, every week or two for a couple of hours. And it's remarkable how members of that group who were at different points on the pole when we started have all found a place somewhere in the middle where we agree on more than we disagree on. those who did not believe that racism was real have come to the conclusion from listening to people who have described what their marginalization looks like and how it makes them feel and how it interferes with their learning and their comfort in this community. And when you hear it from someone that you trust and respect because you've developed a relationship, it becomes more real for them. And when you have students who are reacting in a very emotional way to the repeated microaggressions that they've been subjected to, they can come off as angry and frustrated, but then when they see how that kind of behavior turns off the well-meaning but unknowing majority group person, then you can see a little bit of an adjustment in how they deliver the message. And I think we need more of that. You know, we need more honest conversation amongst family members about what's really happening and what effects those behaviors have on us as a community. And I think that's the way we get to that place where we can start really talking about, honestly, talking about solutions. And so that in a very broad and general sense is the kind of activity that I'd like to foster on all of our campuses in a structured way where most of our people can have that experience. And, you know, they talk about training for students and education for faculty and administrators, and I think all of that has to be about honest, respectful discourse around these issues. And the question is, how quickly can we do that? How can we scale what happened in that race committee to a point where everybody gets the benefit of that kind of behavior? And then how long do we talk before we start doing stuff? And I know there's a real demand that we do something very, very quickly. And I intend to do it as quickly as is humanly possible. But I don't want to go and grab the first thing someone sees on the shelf and buy it and think that it's going to be the solution. I know the solution is going to take hard work. It's going to have to come from us in this community. And it's going to have to be sustained over time for it to have any real effect.
Will we see things like training for new students and staff on race and diversity starting in the spring?
I think you will, yeah. I think Chancellor Lofton made that commitment last semester. And certainly there is training that can be found that has proven effective, particularly for entering students. I mean, it shouldn't be hard to do some training that makes it clear to incoming students that there are values here, there's behavior that will and will not be tolerated. You know, that kind of notice to all newcomers to our community of who we are and how we behave, that should be simple to put together and implement next semester. But the kind of education that we need to be providing to some of the old heads, and the kind of education we need to be providing to some of those new students that come in who have these attitudes ingrained in them and they don't even know it. When you're talking about changing the way people think and feel, you're changing their hearts. I think that's going to take more time. But that is where the longer-term solution, I think, really lies.
We've been talking a little bit about the idea of having conversations and facilitating conversations, and I've talked with a lot of students who work with other students on that, and we've frequently talked about how those conversations are really hard and awkward and uncomfortable, and people really shy away from them. And the idea of engaging a whole campus in these conversations seems like a real challenge.
It is a real challenge, but I'm confident we can do that. We've got brilliant people on this campus in all disciplines, and many of those disciplines, those academic disciplines, deal directly with these kinds of issues. And we need to draw on the talent we have to develop something that grows out of our university community. When we do it ourselves, and when it comes from our knowledge and our backgrounds and our understandings, I think it's a lot better than some commercial product that we can get. It takes time, though. So I'm not opposed to the commercial products for some of the things like the initial incoming student training. That there probably is something out there that would be very effective at setting the stage. And there indeed may be something out there in the research, probably not commercially available, but maybe so, that takes that deeper dive on these issues. If we can find it, we'll certainly consider doing that. But I suspect it's going to be better if we do it ourselves.
Another thing that's been a major topic of discussion is faculty and staff of color and how to increase those numbers. Is there a plan in place, and is there funding for a plan to attract more faculty and staff of color?
Well, there are plans in place on all four campuses, and they've been in place for years. And they have had limited success. It's a difficult issue, particularly when you're talking about attracting faculty of color to a small Midwestern town. And indeed, the recent events might make it appear to be a small Midwestern racist town. So it may be difficult. It may continue to be difficult to get those numbers up. On the Columbia campus, I will tell you, we've done a lot in that regard. We devoted some significant resources to it. We've managed to hire 10 or 12 faculty of color a year. And if we had been able to retain all the people that we hired over the last 15, 20 years, we would have met the students' demand already. The problem is you get people here and they understand that leave. I mean, they're superstars. We hire them. They build a reputation. And some university that has twice the budget we do, twice the amount of state support that we do, in a warmer climate or closer to a bigger city or for any number of one with more prestige than us, people are going to go where the money is, where the opportunity is. So I've regretted so many times hiring somebody and having them, 4 years later, 5 years later, come and tell me, hey, somebody offered to double my salary in Atlanta. I'm going. You can't argue with that. So it's a difficult proposition. We've tried things like, growing our own, finding out, really bright graduate students and trying to groom them, but there's a tendency on the part of universities not to hire your own. So we've talked about partnering with other comparable universities and identifying graduate students at Indiana who they think are really, really great. Well, send them here and we'll send you ours. And that has worked on a limited scale. But there are all kinds of creative ways to tap that limited pool of PhDs of color in the country. So we will continue to try. We will devote more resources to it. But that's probably the hardest, other than changing people's hearts, getting the numbers of faculty of color up to where they ought to be. Is probably the second most difficult problem we're going to have.
And does the money for those hires come from the individual schools or departments, or is there a centralized fund?
What we did on the Mizzou campus was put together a centralized fund. And the fund is really set up as an incentive fund. Either it rewards a department for hiring someone that meets their diversity goal. And you do the statistics and find which departments have under representation among which groups. And if you're hiring somebody that improves your utilization analysis, you'll get a reward. The department will get some half of an amount equivalent to half the salary for them to use in any way they want. I mean, they can use it either to improve the package they're offering to that person, or they can use it to, you know, squirrel away, and maybe they can accumulate some money and do another one. But it's just an incentive award. Sometimes the fund is used when a department has a great candidate but doesn't have a vacancy. Well, we would create a vacancy and provide the funding for that position for 2 or 3 years, depending upon your estimate of when there will be a slot available. And you kind of know who's leaving or who's going to retire in 2 years. And if the dean says, "Well, I know I can, I'm going to have a slot in 2018," well, I will cover you until 2018. And when that slot vacates, you don't get to keep that slot. It becomes the slot that I just let you fill. So those kinds of techniques allow us to go after targets of opportunity, and that works. But none of these mechanisms really makes a huge dent in the overall numbers, because if you go after a target of opportunity, you're going to have somebody on staff who is a target of opportunity for somebody else. So it's, you know, it's kind of a revolving door, and that's a difficult issue.
And would that centralized fund be increased at any point in the near future?
Well, probably so. I mean, we've spent all of what we've allocated to that program annually, and we've increased it a little bit over the years. But, you know, that was in the context of a very limited budget, and we were, you know, stealing money from other activities. I think the beauty of our situation now, what makes me optimistic now, is that we know what we need to do. We know that we need more resources to really put a dent in this issue. And I think the board is convinced that we're going to have to find, I want to say what we need to do this job. But what we need to do this job is probably beyond the board's capacity. But we're going to commit as much as we can to doing this job. I think, frankly, that there are supporters of the university out there, donors who have gifts to make and contributions to make to their university, who also think this is important. And I think a targeted development campaign around these issues could generate some resources that could help us invest what we need to invest to make some real significant progress in this area. But the board, I know, is committed. Our budget director is already looking at the numbers, trying to see what he can pull together in the immediate future. And we're going to devote some significant resources to this.
It's like a window of opportunity.
It's a window of opportunity. It's our chance to shine. It's our chance to become a national leader, at least in this area. And I fully intend to do everything I can to make that happen.
That was MU System Interim President Mike Middleton. Those plans for education and recruiting faculty of color that he spoke about are also things that Angela Speck, chair of the Faculty Council Diversity Enhancement Committee, is thinking about. We'll hear from her now as we continue exploring the topic of diversity and inclusion here on campus.
Well, so Faculty Council has 6 different standing committees that are made up by Faculty Council members. And they're things like academic affairs, student affairs, and then the most recently added, although it's been there longer than I have, is the Diversity Enhancement Committee, and it's aimed at looking at all issues of diversity on campus.
And when we talk about diversity in this context, what is diversity in terms of what you're looking at?
So diversity is really about all the different ways in which we can be different. So it covers issues of gender, it covers issues of race, ability, sexual orientation, anything that may be some axis on which we are considered different, that counts as diversity.
And what are some of the recent movements that that committee has been engaged in?
We've been doing a lot, actually, basically since the death of Mike Brown in Ferguson. There's been a lot of activity on campus, and that's, you know, 14, 15 months at this point. We've been working on looking at ways to improve life for diverse students. So the majority of students on campus are white and middle class. If you come from a working class background, then you're in a minority. If you're an atheist, you're a minority. If you have a disability, you're a minority. As well as the more obvious minorities, people of color, and then if you're in sciences, often women would be minorities. So if you're in any sort of minority, there's often issues that make campus or just the world in general less safe for you and less welcoming. And so really it's about looking at all of that, all of the things that make campus less welcoming for anybody who's coming to campus. Obviously, with Ferguson and Mike Brown, the issue of race became a big issue, but that doesn't mean that the other aspects of diversity aren't important.
And I was reading that there's been talk about a diversity cultural competency requirement here. What is that, and where does it stand right now?
So this is something that's come up from time to time in the past. Actually, about 4 years ago, 5 years ago, this came up through faculty council. And curriculum is entirely in the hands of faculty. So if we want to make major changes to our required curriculum for the whole campus, the entire faculty has to vote on it. 4 years ago, it was voted down. There were good reasons for that. But part of it was that cultural competency in all its forms, and especially with relation to racism and sexism, is difficult to talk about. And people are very conflict averse. And so there were things that weren't said prior to the vote last time around that should have been said. It's very hard to do communication on campus. It doesn't matter how hard you try. People will be like, well, why didn't I know about this? And so what we're doing now is basically taking ideas for how we can run a cultural competency requirement for the whole campus. And it's still in flux. It's something that we've come up with ideas. We've put them out there. People said, we don't like that, because we look at what the problems are. We understand. And there's all sorts of different things that you have to worry about. You don't want to put more burden on students in terms of cost or in terms of credit hours. You don't want to put burdens on departments that have accreditation. But you want something that really addresses issues of what we don't understand about diversity. The majority of our students are not diverse. That's what makes them not diverse. And may not have had strong interactions with people who come from diverse backgrounds. And so it's really a way of helping them to be more globally aware. And it's an important part of being a human, and so it's part of what we want to do. So right now we have a proposal that is available for people to read on the Transparency website. That's transparency.missouri.edu. And right now it's the idea is that we would come up with a rubric that defines what aspects we expect a course to have. And we are actually thinking there's probably of the order of 50 courses already on campus across several colleges that would fulfill this requirement. But they'll get the official stamp of approval from a committee that looks at all the courses. And then a student will be required to take it as part of their gen ed. So it would just be, you know, you're taking this for your behavioral science or your humanities or whatever. So it would be a small change from a student's point of view, but it means that they will definitely be exposed to ideas and concepts that they may never have come across.
So it wouldn't necessarily be a new, specific, huge class that everybody took. It could be encouraging people or having people access courses that already exist.
That's right. We've been talking about different courses that might fulfill this requirement. And so for instance, the journalism school already does this. There's no point in reinventing the wheel. The important thing is, you know, we already have a multicultural certificate, and not all the courses there cover the sort of materials, you know. Multicultural is a slightly different aspect. It's a slightly different idea. We really want to cover issues of how people get marginalized and what that looks like. And then when you have intersection of marginalization, that's also an issue. But that can be done in lots of different ways. In talking to people on campus, we've heard about courses in German and Russian studies where they discuss race in Germany and kind of by accident talk about race in the U.S. And, you know, so it doesn't have to be something that sets out to be, you know, this is a cultural competency course, as long as it has those aspects within it.
What does it mean to be a culturally competent person?
That's a really complex idea, and that's why it's really important to have a group of people that come up with the rubric that says this. So, you know, from my perspective, it's that you are aware of what happens outside of your own sphere. That, you know, if so, most people have some sort of marginalization, even if they may not realize it. And people who are marginalized usually have some access in which they have an advantage. And so having people understand where they fit in the world and where other people fit so that they can have more empathy for other people. And that will make how we get on, how we collaborate, how we work in business, you know, it's an important part of being a human and working in society. So that's kind of the big idea, is that you have some understanding of what it's like to not be the same as you are.
Angela Speck is a professor of physics and astronomy, director of the astronomy program, and chair of the Faculty Council Diversity Enhancement Committee at MU. A few weeks ago, Intersection's community outreach team posted an online questionnaire asking people to share their thoughts on racism on campus and on efforts to make campus a more diverse and inclusive space. We selected some of those answers, and members of our Intersection team read them here.
Here's an anonymous staff member's answer to, "Why do you think racist incidents keep happening on campus?" The staff member said, "When you introduce 35,000 students from around the world with a multitude of cultures and backgrounds, it is ludicrous to expect them to all get along without issue. Part of being an adult is learning to talk about your differences and get along with people you disagree with. Screaming racial slurs is unacceptable, but so is expecting administration to change policy to combat what is ultimately a student-on-student issue. No amount of diversity training or mandatory diversity courses will change the hearts and minds of bigots. It must be an effort made by individuals to reach out and show them their shared humanity."
This is an anonymous alum's answer to how do you experience diversity or lack of diversity at Mizzou. Mizzou is a place for each of us to explore the identities we value within ourselves. It's a place for us to change and mold and grow as people in a space that accepts diversity. Or it should be. In my time at MU, I saw people engaging with students and staff and faculty in ways that made me proud to be a Tiger. But I also saw racism, homophobia, transphobia thrive. I would love to have seen a focus from the administration on issues of diversity from day one instead of continuing to be a reactive measure.
Thank you for spending your time with us here at Intersection, Conversations in Our Community. I'm Sarah Shariari for Intersection here at KBIA 91.3 FM.